Unfortunately, I'm 6 foot two and it was no good being a jockey at my height. But if you've got a situation where Liverpool wanted to sell me, Everton are going to offer me loads of money, would I have gone there? You know, you can't be a soft touch. You know, people always say, oh, you're nice, you know, maybe you're too nice. I'm not. I've got that, you have to have that streak. I've been at Tottenham as a 14-year-old and I left because I said at the time I was a bit homesick. Make no bones about it, we had a few good-looking lads in that team, but none of us can make that suit look good.
Hello and welcome to another very special edition of the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. It is a keeping of our theme of special guests. I'm delighted to join Mr. Jamie Redknapp, the show. Jamie, how are you?
Very well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. And once again, I'm going to just put a sock in my mouth and shut up for the next 20 minutes, half an hour or so. And it's Paddy Power and Ruby Walsh's gig. Lads, take it away.
Jamie, how are you? I can guarantee you between now and the next half an hour, Tom Nugent will manage to remove that sock from his mouth and somehow get involved, as he always does. But anyway, we'll get going. Jamie, I'm from a racing family. My dad was an amateur jockey and a trainer. It was always in my blood. People expected me to get into racing. Was it always the same for you from a football background? Was it always going to be football?
Pretty much. I have to be honest, Ruby, as you well know, my dad, as growing up, was either football or horse racing. I mean, the amount of times I'd come back and horse racing would be on the TV, that's his other passion. Unfortunately, I'm 6 foot two and it was no good being a jockey at my height. I was lucky enough, I've got a brother, Mark, and we both love football. And I'm sure, as you well know, it's the sacrifices you've got to make, the dedication. And that's the difference between, say, my brother, who liked football, but I loved it. And I think that's probably what would be your story. You would be up earlier than anybody else. You were the last probably to leave because you had obviously a talent, but also you had an amazing ability and passion to go with it.
Yeah, I think it's the passion. People often say, well, you're forced into it. Is that what you had to do? It wasn't. It's what I wanted to do. It's all I ever dreamt of. That was the same for you.
Absolutely the same. I mean, I was fortunate in a way that, because my childhood was slightly different to most people, because my dad was the manager of Bournemouth growing up, local team. So rather than going to school a lot of the time, he'd say, look, do you want to come training with me? And it's obviously not ideal. It wasn't ideal for my education, but in terms of a football education, growing up, learning how to be streetwise, walking into a dressing room with sort of like men that were tough from all different backgrounds, different races. So it was a perfect environment to grow up in, really, because I learned so much about, you know, I'm 11, 12 years of age, about growing up and being a man. I probably learned too many swear words too early, heard too many stories. People telling stories about your dad as well. That's not always easy to hear because some people aren't happy with him because he's not picking them. But all in all, mate, I had a great childhood, a lovely, loving family, great brother that used to kick lumps at me. He's a bit older, but I would also thank him for helping me along the way because he made me, you know, get tougher probably in a lot of ways. And I think it goes, I don't know about your, you know, brothers and sisters. Did you have people with a passion for what you did as well?
Yeah, obviously Katie did. She rode. Jennifer ended up my age and Ted was a bit bigger. He's 6 foot two and his passion was rugby. But yeah, look, of course he did. But horses were always here. So it was always your life. And the same things. People tell me about my dad. Some liked him, some didn't like him. So yeah, you had to learn to grow up quickly enough and take the rough with the smooth, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I call, you know, in a way it makes you tougher because you have to, you know, sometimes they'll take things on and walk into environments that are quite hostile. And it was hostile then. People were talking about players now. You know, I remember sort of even growing up as a 15, 16-year-old, I was playing football with my dad's team. And it wasn't just me because of my dad. It was all the other. Like you said, you know, when you used to walk into the first team dressing, you have to knock on the door. You're a bit nervous about going in there because you knew you were going to get a load of stick, things being thrown at you. And just, it's a totally different world now. I think young footballers aren't so fearful, maybe even respectful of their elders. It is a different environment that they grow up in. And, you know, we were, you know, 19, 20, you know, when I first went to Liverpool, you know, the cars, even things like that, you were a bit nervous about having a posh, like a really nice car because people maybe think, oh, what's he got that for? He's too young to have that. Whereas I don't think it's probably the same now. Young players earn so much, young footballers earn so much money so early that I don't suppose they have to, you know, look at it in that kind of way.
But then when Liverpool did sign you, and it was for big money at the time. Did you feel that pressure? Was the pressure on you to perform? Did you? How did you cope with that?
It's a weird one, really. I think I got more nervous as I got older. I mean, to think that I grew up in, you know, in what was a relatively, you know, I don't know if you've ever been down to Bournemouth. It's a quiet place. It's a lovely place to grow up. And at 16 years of age, you know, Kenny, what, 16, 17, Kenny wanted to, you know, to sign me. And Dad was, I've been at Tottenham as a 14-year-old. And I left because I said at the time I was a bit homesick. And I felt that there was an easier pathway to get into Bournemouth first team. And then I did that. And then about a year later, Kenny wanted to sign me. And it was a massive jump. I mean, you can't, you know, not just in terms of the players, in terms of the environment, growing up in Bournemouth to growing up in Liverpool, which is totally different. And it took time. I must admit, I'd love to say, yeah, no, it was fine. I didn't have any problems. I missed home. I missed my mum and dad. I missed those home, you know, the touches, the dinners, the things that we take for granted, your own bed. But I got on with it. I had to. I had no choice because I knew if I wanted to be a footballer, I had to, you know, to sacrifice myself and make sure you do everything you can. And although it's 5 hours away, it felt like another world, you know. And I had some lonely times. I remember a few times when I wasn't playing well and I was struggling for form. But I found it incredibly difficult. And I felt like, oh, I wish I could just go home. But you know what it's like. And I'm sure you had those moments. You just got to suck it up and think, well, I can do this. And, you know, you get ready for the challenges ahead.
You try anyway.
That's exactly what I was about to ask you, why you said no to Spurs, but you just answered that anyway. But when you're at Liverpool, like, that was kind of, surrounded by superstars, I guess, and you mentioned Kenny Dalglish and Graeme Souness, you played under as well, and you end up working with him at Sky. I mean, were you the type of person who would have kind of abrasive relationships with people? Did you fall out with anyone or have scraps when you had to stand up for yourself, I guess, as a kid, to make sure to show you've got character and all that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. I don't think anybody that gets to a level that, you know, when you guys are talking about sport, you know, as well as anybody, you've got to have a bit about you. You know, you can't be a soft touch. You know, people say, oh, you're nice. You know, maybe you're too nice. I'm not. I've got that. You have to have that streak. You know, you've got to be able to walk, you know, when you're walking into dressing rooms or environments and, you know, and it's like, you know, with all the great jockeys and you walk there and you've got your peers and people you respect so much. Some of them are so nice. Like John Barnes was my hero growing up and he became even more of a hero for my first day at Liverpool and he looked after me and he put his arm around me and he made me feel comfortable. But there was one or two others that weren't. You know, they were like looking after themselves. They maybe look at you as a threat. So you've got to really be strong. You've got to make sure that you stick up for yourself and show what you can do. And it's not always that easy because everyone expects you to be brilliant. And, you know, like Kenny Dalglish, who was the manager, and he obviously was like me as a player. But once he leaves after, sort of, I think it was 3 or 4 months, that safety, that comfort blanket's gone to a certain extent. I've got to get on with it. I'm on my own now because a new manager coming in, and Graeme Souness, to be fair, I don't even knew my name for half the time. And all of a sudden he looked at me and thought, we can play a bit. I might need him. And then he start playing you. That's how it works in football.
That was the 90s, Jamie, when people rave on about football being football. What was it really like on the pitch? Was it as tough as people made it out to be?
It was. I mean, obviously, when you look back at some of the games when my dad played, and there's that famous game, I think it's between Chelsea and Leeds, when they've actually reffed it since, and there was like so many red cards in that game. You had the likes of Roy Keane, and I work on Sky with Roy, and Roy's as tough as they come, and people like Dennis Wise, and they were allowed to sort of, you know, and same for me, you'd be able to foul or try to, you know, do someone in those days and you get 3 or 4 goes out and then maybe the yellow card might come out. Whereas now the game has changed so much that if there is a foul or a bad tackle, it could be a straight red after 1 minute. And that's just how the game is. Some don't like it. I have to be honest, I'd love to have played now because the pitches are perfect. It's the great place that, you know, the football now has become so sanitized. And if you can play a little bit and you've got a nice touch, everything is set up for you because the referee's protection, it's a totally different game to the one I played in a lot of ways. And also the way we played, everything's about playing the ball on the floor. For the first 20 minutes, some games, you know, when I was at Liverpool, you go and play Wimbledon, you just knew you had to earn the right to play because they were kicking lumps out. Yeah, yeah. John Fashion who telling you, listen, don't come in here, son. This is fascist space. And I'll be thinking, cool, what is it? If I get in fascist space, what am I going to get? And the next thing you get a big elbow around the face. So yeah, that was a lot. That was actually how it was.
I tell you, did you ever have to, like, obviously very tight with your old man still and always were, were you ever ringing them in tears, nearly dying? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? They're being mean to me type of stuff. Like when you get there, first of all.
Yeah, nah, more on League of Their Own, I have to be honest. I get more stick on League of Their Own. No, I never got to that point. I've got to be honest, and if it would have been, I'd have probably rang my mum more than my dad, because dad would have been like, just get on with it. You know, he's a bit more old school in a lot of ways. But no, of course there were times. I was like, you know, like 17, 18, and come from Bournemouth. You move up to Liverpool and people are looking at you like, you know, long hair, who's this flash? Even though I'm from Bournemouth, you're still a Cockney to them. So who's this flash so-and-so coming into our world? So you've got to, it wasn't easy. And I felt like, you know, you've got to make sure that you don't, you know, you can't, and it's a lot better environment now for people, because you can, we talk about mental health and we talk about how you can make things better. In our day, we didn't have that, did we? So it's a bit more, I think people are more respectful of people's feelings, and not so much on social media, I must add, but I think a lot of the time people are aware if someone's having a tough time, yeah, okay, maybe there's more to it than just he's playing rubbish.
Do you think you were lucky that there was no social media when you turned up at the FA Cup final in those beautiful white suits?
They were shockers, weren't they? Oh my, could you imagine now? Imagine the Paddy Power advert with us lot. I mean, some of the ads are so near the mark. I mean, they didn't even need, they would have just put that up as a picture in itself. I mean, yeah, I mean, when I think back to that, that was amazing, really. But I remember, I think I must have been 21, 22 guys at the time, and we had our normal club suits. And I don't, to this day, like Roy Evans is a great guy, super bright. We had John Barnes, Ian Rush, leaders in that dressing room. Although quite quiet, Rushy was quite quiet. He just do his business, you know, got on with his game. I still to this day don't understand why no one went, listen, guys, why don't we just wear our normal suits? You know, I think I could, the only thing I could think of. No, I know. Are you a United fan, by the way?
I am. I must say I got a great kick out of seeing you wearing those white suits.
I know. You know, it was a mess, but I think we'd beaten United twice that year in the league. And I that might have been something to do with it, because maybe we thought, oh, we've done them in the league. We can beat them. It's not a, but it's, and I think subsequently Alex Ferguson said, oh, we knew we'd won, which I bet we'll have to swear on it, but that was a load of bollocks anyway, because he had, with that game, we were actually marginally better, I'd say, but it was obviously a mistake, Cantona scores. And apart from that, there was nothing in the game. So to say that you see someone in a white suit and that's the difference, we just look ridiculous. Let's make no bones about it. We had a few good looking lads in that team, but none of us can make that suit look good.
No, you, Steve McManaman, Robbie Fowler, you were all there together. But when Steve headed off to Real Madrid and became a pretty big star, did it ever cross your mind to go abroad? Could you have ever went abroad?
Gee, there was a couple of instances. There was a time when I was about 22, when Roma had a player called Giannini, a really good player, very cultured midfield player, someone that I really respected. And he was known as the Prince at the time in Roma, for Roma. And he was retiring or leaving. I can't remember exactly what happened at the time. And then they got in touch with Liverpool, my agents, and Liverpool at the time said no. I was a little bit nervous about it. I had 11 great years at Liverpool. I loved it. But I think it would have been a great thing to do, to go and play abroad, to learn another language. Look at Chris Smalling's example, who's going to play for Roma now. And I think, wow, I'm kind of jealous of that. But I would love to have played abroad. It would have probably suited my game a little bit as well, the way that they play in Italy. But you know what? You can't, it's like anything. You can't jog backwards. I'm sure you know, you guys have had opportunity to work with different people along the way, different stables. And it's sort of, sometimes you think, yeah, I should have done that. I shouldn't. You know, you just got to be happy with what you got sometimes. I was playing for a great club in Liverpool.
Jamie, just want to jump in there. The loyalty. You seem like an honest bloke. So you might be honest, but most footballers aren't really that honest about this. But you're old enough, no offence, to be able to be honest with this. So club loyalty, it seems like a bit of a load of bollocks now. But back in the day, for example, if Everton came in with a squillion quid contract, would you have left Liverpool and gone to Everton, or was there loyalty to the club?
I suppose, because I think a lot of the lads that are from the area, it's probably more difficult for them. But if you've got a situation where Liverpool wanted to sell me, Everton are going to offer me loads of money, would I have gone there? Yeah, I'm sure I would have done, because I think, you know, you've got to go. You've got to remember, it goes, but when you retire, nobody cares about you. I think that was something my dad always said to me. You know, you've got to get it while you can, because when you retire, no one cares. And it's a fact. You know, when I left Liverpool after 11 years, they looked after me brilliantly. There were times when that embarrassment of not playing, but the club's still paying you wages. So there are so many different aspects to it. And some players get that loyalty, and I certainly got it in abundance with Liverpool because they looked after me so well. But it's football. It's a job at the end of the day. And I look at some players, you know, would I have gone, you know, listen, I'd love to have played for Alex Ferguson. I can't lie. It must have been an incredible experience because of the way that he manages teams. Not all great teams won trophies. And that's the one thing I look back in my career, but I didn't win enough. But I certainly wouldn't have swapped my time at Liverpool. I had the best time playing with brilliant lads, great players. The only thing that was missing was the ice on the cake, which is medals.
Funny, actually, on that point, just you said it there during that that answer was you mentioned about not playing but still getting paid and being mildly uncomfortable with that. Do you think many players are? I mean, it'd be obviously the highest profile one recently, in my mind anyway, was Gareth Bale over Madrid. Like, it just seemed to be forever on the golf course getting paid millions a week or whatever it was, and that seemed to be grand. Is that just how it is?
Well, I think there's two sides to the Gareth Bale one. The manager obviously didn't fancy him, and what's the point? He won three Champions Leagues for them, you know, scored in finals. He was amazing. I always felt uncomfortable, and I was at Liverpool for 11 years, and I Liverpool offered me a testimonial, but I forfeited it because I just didn't feel comfortable. You know, unless you'd have given it, I'd maybe done a charity element to it. But even then, it can still, once you say you're having a testimonial, that's still out there rather than actually the message of you wanting to do it for a charity or whatever. So I never felt comfortable. Although I had 11 years, I probably had 6 or 7 of them playing, maybe 8. I'm not quite as injured as everyone makes out, you know, more towards the end of my career. But that was something that I just felt uncomfortable with. I never wanted to take liberties with what, you know, how good Liverpool been. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to take money out of the game to having a testimonial when, obviously, towards the end of my career, I had a lot of injuries.
This New Year's Day, Paddy Power want to make one lucky punter a millionaire. Opt in and back a winner in one of our weekly millionaire qualifier races to be in with a chance to scoop the 1 million. Pick one winner, win 1 million. Not a bad way to ring in the new year, eh? Beats the hootenanny and a dodgy curry anyway. To enter and to find out more, visit paddypower.com. Paddy Power.
T's and C's apply. Exclude shops. Selected markets only. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Jamie, just going back, you mentioned admiring Alex Ferguson there, and I suppose management is a side of the game that maybe has just been blown up over the last couple of years. There's so much pressure on the managers. Managers are perceived to have such a huge influence on players and on a team, and I'm sure they do, but this obsession with kind of football philosophies and stuff is huge now. Was management as a player something that appealed to you as a potential next move, and now are you kind of in a very much a mindset that, Jesus, thank God I didn't go down that road?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because my dad always used to say to me, you know, you'd be a good manager, you'd know the game. I've been in and around, like, obviously since I was a kid, I've watched my dad, and now and I've worked with a lot of managers. A lot of them are bluffers. Make no mistake, they talk about tactics and, you know, they've read the coaching manual and we all go, oh, they're amazing. Half of them haven't really got a clue, but they just maybe baffle people with science and tactics and systems. And there's a lot of amazing, you know, armchair footballers, you know, that think that they know best. So it's a really difficult one. And when I retired, I wanted some time at the game. And then I just got so lucky. I ended up working for Sky, which is a brilliant place. You know, they're all passionate about football like I am, because I can't have anything else. You know, football is so important in my life. It's, you know, always has been, always will be. And I got into Liga de Rome, which is, I know, like, big people love it. You know, amount of Irish people that come up to me and say how much they love Liga de Rome. And so it's one of those that if I get into management, you could get the wrong job, you know, or get a job 6 months' time. You know, you don't do very well. Next thing, you're sacked. Your credibility's gone. And it wasn't something I really fancied. I wanted to be a footballer as a kid. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to play football. I never once, you know, wanted to be a manager. I would also say, from my dad's point of view, the amount of people that I've spoken to that said that when he was a player, let's say at West Ham or even at Bournemouth, he was the biggest nutcase in the dressing room. Like, absolute nightmare. You know, didn't fall out with the managers, and he ended up managing 1,000 games. So it doesn't, you know, you never quite know how it works out. Dad's obviously just got an amazing gift of brilliant with people, understands players. And, you know, because he's probably been, you know, because he's had a lot of sort of, issues, not issues, probably the right word, but he obviously had a few different things that as a young man. He understood what it takes and what people go through, because he is the best man manager I work with. I've seen him, by the way, I've seen him cut people dead, but I've also seen him make people feel 7 feet tall, although Crouchy is 7 feet. But he's brilliant with people.
Actually, just go back to the white suit, just a very serious point. Do you still have it?
Do you know what? I do somewhere in my garage. I've got to be honest, I don't wear it out. I don't think if I wore it out to a nightclub, it would do me any favours. But no, it will be somewhere.
I can guarantee you, if you'd worn your normal club suits, you wouldn't still have that one. So there you go. Maybe there was a reason for it.
I often think, though, wouldn't it be great if I did have it and we would have won that cup final? How much would they have been worth? Like, imagine Robbie Fowler, as an example, scored the winning goal in that white suit. It would have been so cool. If you look at the other side of it, I know it's a bit late and I'm scraping the barrel a little bit here, but I'm just looking at the positives. Sometimes you've got to look at the positives in life.
If he'd scored the goal in his white suit, that would have been something. But clothes are quite close to your heart, I guess. You've got we see on the telly all the time for Skechers. Just wondering, are you wearing Skechers at the moment?
Listen, mate, I got my socks on. But I'll tell you what, don't you worry about that. See this? Let me show you something, right? Just so you know. Skechers socks.
Oh, Skechers, very good. Very good.
Don't worry about that. Yeah, and before anyone says, oh, yeah, you knew, I didn't know you were going to ask me that question.
I know.
I'll send you some.
I must admit, it wasn't the answer I was hoping for.
Touch of class now. He's landed the Skechers bonus there now. He's landed.
Exactly.
Well done. Well done.
So tell us, Roy Keane, you mentioned him earlier on. Is he as terrifying? Like, were you scared of him as a player? And are, like, as a pundit now, is he someone you're kind of watch your P's and Q's with? Or is it just have a bit of crack and a bit of banter kind of thing?
Honestly, Roy was tough. But Roy could play. He could have it always. If you want, he was a good footballer, but he was also, incredible desire, will to win. I remember, even the way he used to talk to his own players at times. If you couldn't handle that side of the game, you had no chance. I mean, he was that fearsome, but he wanted to win, and it was a drive. He was the manager on the pitch for Alex Ferguson. But I would say that working for Sky, I honestly wasn't sure. I thought this is going to be quite interesting, but I love listening to him. I think he's great. He makes me laugh. He's a fun, and a lot of the time what you see on air, there's also a lot of fun off it. He's very, very much a student in the game. He says things that we often go, if I said that, then people would just laugh. But the fact that he says it, he gets away with it, and absolutely brilliant. And he's been an unbelievable signing for us, because I think he makes the game, it gives a bit of comedy, although it's not meant to be. Do you know what I mean? When he says something like about a player and they're defending, how did he do that? He goes, because he was up against an idiot. I'm thinking, imagine saying that. But because it's Roy Keane, he can say it, he gets away with it,
And I guess it works, hence I asked you the question. I mean, the fact that he
exactly.
even asked the question.
How funny are those Paddy Power ads? Who thinks of those?
By the way, the FA Cup one was pretty awesome. Your acting, I shouldn't be surprised, but your acting ability was excellent in that.
No, they did it. Well, it was a good, the guys were nice, actually. Yeah. The one that I saw, someone put that on a WhatsApp group yesterday, the one with the snake. Yes, with the two, like the heat behind.
Oh, yeah.
But it's so funny, but it's genius. I'm thinking, how has somebody actually thought of that? Wouldn't you think it's like, even because if you were like Declan or, when I saw it, I was like, what? What's that? You know what I mean? I don't get, then obviously it was like so clever.
And do you reckon just say that was about you, put yourself in their shoes, would that make you giggle or would you go, those pricks shouldn't be doing that?
Oh, no, I'd giggle. I'd just go, that's brilliant. I'd say that's genius. Whoever's thought of that, fair play.
Anyway, listen, when you went into punditry first, did you expect, you say you love football and you're obviously mad about it and all that kind of stuff, so you know everything that needs to be known. But is it like not a job, or were you surprised with the amount of work and research you have to do?
No, I have to say, I didn't look at it as a job, because I loved it. I'd always... I watch football religiously. I love watching my golf. At the moment, I'm watching the Masters. I think, like probably everyone is, that loves their sport. I love all live sport. I love a night. I love a day at the race. I love going to Cheltenham or, you know, when there was Liverpool, I used to go to Haydock or, you know, or the Grand National. Brilliant occasions. But
don't worry, we'll give you tickets. It's grand. We'll invite you. It's grand, Jamie.
Right, I'm coming. Cheltenham. That's what I'm aiming for. But the football, like the punditry stuff was just, I suppose you go two ways. You know, I retired at 31, got told by a doctor, you're never going to play football again. And it's heartbreaking. I'm not going to lie. It was a day Liverpool won the Champions League. And so I had so much emotion of like the joy for the players, for Stevie and all the boys that have won the Champions League, but also tears because I knew that was it. The doctor told me, if you carry on playing, you're going to need a knee replacement in a couple of years. And that was all I needed to know. I was in America with Dr. Steadman, who's the best surgeon there is. And that was it. So I thought, right, okay, what do? Do I get into management? It's not really what I want to do. Let's have a bit of time and do some work with Sky. And I've been so lucky. You know, I work with brilliant people, a lot of passion there for the guys, you know, the guys that I work with, a different class. So yeah, it couldn't have fallen into my lap any better. And obviously, as I said, League of Their Own, a few bits come along the way and working with you guys. I've been so lucky, so lucky.
It brings it home when you say you have to retire at 31. Like, retire at 31 is awful, isn't it? But here, with regard to your injuries, was there one in particular that led to the others, or are you just unlucky with that? I mean, with the knee thing?
I'd say a bit unlucky, a bit of mismanagement, I would say, looking at it now. But I'm not a bitter person. I don't like go, oh, we should, like, there are things I look at and think, why did I do that? I mean, remember, I tore my meniscus when I was 18 years of age, 18, 19, maybe a bit more. Graham Souness' last game for Liverpool, we're playing Bristol City. The midweek game we played against Leeds, and David Rocast was a great player. But he used to do a scissor tackle. That was his thing. Sort of wriggle past him, and he's done a scissor tackle on me. I mean, I felt a little bit of something in my knee. I thought, well, that didn't feel quite right. All weekend, I'm, you know, resting, trying to get it right. Anyway, we play on the Tuesday night. It's not great. I don't feel perfect with it. Someone throws a ball to me a minute to go before halftime. We're losing against Bristol City 1-0 in an FA Cup second, like a replay. Not ideal at Anfield to be losing to Bristol City, but, you know, as you would well know. As I pass it back to him, I side foot the ball and I feel something in the inside of my leg. And I've never felt anything quite like it. Really like a little tear or something like that. Anyway, we get back into the dressing room. As I sit down, I go to stand up, my knee is locked, and I'm like, my God. Graham Souness is in the middle of the dressing room, growling, fuming at us because with that 1-0 down, I'm now going, right, what can I do? I can't straighten my leg. I'm in a terrible position. I don't know what I've done. So I called a club doc over and I said, look, doc, he was a lovely guy, Dr. Waller. I said, I'm struggling. I can't straighten my leg. He gets me on the table and says, you know, I think you've torn your meniscus. I was like, okay. So he pulls Graham over, you know, great, he's got to come off. You know, obviously Graham wasn't too happy. What could I do? Anyway, I had a surgery a couple of days later. I genuinely can't think of the guy's name. He took my meniscus out, all of it. So I'm 18 years of age. I don't know anything different. I'm like, great, get it out and I can play again as quickly as possible. I trained in 10 days and I played again in 2 weeks with my meniscus out. And if I look back now, or if they did that now to any sport, any footballer, you'd be out for 3 months and you'd probably play within 6 months because they'd preserve the meniscus and they'd make sure that they, because that's where your protection is. So from that day on, I'm playing, but I'm like got bone on bone. So at 27 years of age, hence I get a chondral defect. So to play within two weeks was just complete negligence. So I suppose I was a little bit unlucky in that respect, but I didn't know any different. I was thinking, well, my meniscus will grow back. I wasn't a doctor. You know, unfortunately, now I know more about knees than anything, but it was an incredibly tough time because I was just told, you're going to be all right and you can play. And, you know, but then I broke my ankle twice. I had torn hamstrings playing for England. You know, when people call you injury prone, but yeah, I'm sure I was, but they weren't little injuries. I always think of that when you've got, oh, he can't play because he doesn't, you know, he's got a little knock. You know, these were unfortunately all injuries that cost me years out of my career. I was just very unlucky.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. Like it stresses the importance of looking after the kids, especially the kids, because they just want to play whenever they can. But come here, you mentioned England there and disappointments, I guess, because you're involved with a good few England teams over the years, and there's always massive hype going into the big tournaments and that. And I'm sure plenty of ex-players have been asked about this. But like, why did it always go so pear-shaped? Is there? Can you put your finger on one thing, or was it just not good enough?
Well, I can only look. I played in one major tournament. I was injured. I had knee operations for two others. And I played in Euro 96 when we were, a stud away from beating Germany in the semi-final. I think it was Paul Gascoigne when Darren and Paul Gascoigne, I can't remember. And we had such a good side. We had everything, that team, Shearer and Sheringham, Tony Adams and Paul Lintz and Steve McManaman and Robbie Fowler, players like that were even on the bench, Robbie Fowler. So we had such a good squad. And there has been other times when I think the managers we've had have not picked the players in their best positions. I think back to, they call it the golden generation, with obviously Frank and Stevie Gerrard, because sometimes you have too many good players in the same position, and you need a manager who's going to be strong enough to say, right, no, we're not going to play you and shoehorn you into a team because that's going to get the best out of you. You need someone who's going to say, no, that's not right. That balance of, Gerrard, Lampard, or playing Gerrard on the left or whatever, that doesn't work. You've got to be cruel to be kind for what the best thing is for the team. And we've had managers that perhaps haven't been strong enough to do that in the past. I think we've had an embarrassment of riches, over the last few years. We've also had, obviously losing to Iceland and things like that was a huge embarrassment for the country. But, we've had some good players. It's like it goes in cycles. You think about, in Ireland, how many great players over the years in the Republic of Ireland. All of a sudden, you have a little bit of a glut. You haven't got that Robbie Keane, that superstar, that Roy Keane. And, you go back to Liam Brady many years ago, and players like that, and Ray Houghton, and some of the greats you've had. There's not that many, that you go, it goes in cycles. I think we've got a rich vein. I think we've got a good team at the moment, some really good young players, but even then, it's never that easy to fit him into the team. The press get involved a lot, and who's the best, what the best team is at the time. It's never that easy. It's always, I said it before, there's a lot of great armchair coaches.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Okay, well, Jamie, listen, the good news is all that was just a warm-up, because the highlight of this, as you're probably aware, is the quiz at the end. So you have a choice here. You can go flat or jump. So I know you are aware of horse racing. So flat is nice, a few easy questions. And jumps is a bit more interesting and a bit trickier. And just to bear in mind that even if you say flat, I'm going to ask you the jumps questions anyway. So would you like to go for flat or jumps, Jamie?
Well, we might as well get on the jumps, haven't we?
Yeah, good choice. Good choice. I like your style.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, right. Jamie Redknapp, the most famous person's house where you've had a poo.
Wow, that's a good one. I was expecting some really tough sports question there.
It's not really that. I wouldn't say it's a good one. It's a weird one.
Well, I would say Freddie Flintoff has blocked my toilet before. Does that count?
So
he blocked it.
Well, he didn't block it
with my toilet.
Well, that's interesting. But he didn't block it with your poo, I assume.
I'm looking over there at my toilet, and I've just still got bad memories of that. It's the poor. It was out of action for a couple of weeks. It was not good. Let me think. Oh yeah, James. I mean, this is James Corden's in LA.
Okay. Great.
Yeah,
okay,
we've been out for dinner before. I mean, that's pretty A-list.
You don't have to describe the poo. It's fine. We just need to know that you're right.
Well, I'm looking. I'm thinking about it now.
Okay. Well, actually, speaking of James Corden, what do you really think of him?
Love him. He's amazing. He's such a good guy. So bright. Always been brilliant with me. Incredibly funny and talented. Yeah, we missed him this year on League of Their Own, actually. But no, I speak to him a lot. He loves his football. Big West Ham fan. He always messages me, and weird. I'll get a FaceTime when we're talking. I'm doing a game on Sky, and he'll ask me the most bizarre question about Frank Lampard's now wearing suits rather than a tracksuit and stuff like that. So yeah, we have a I get on great with James. He's amazing.
Okay. And now finally a football one. Who is the worst manager you've played under? And have you ever sat in a dressing room, just sat there, head in your hands going, this guy has no idea what he's doing?
I can't, you're breaking up a bit here. I can't hear you. I can't. I'm not going there.
Come on. You have to. If you can talk about shitting in somebody's house, you can surely tell us about
it. You don't have to mention it. Just tell us, have you ever sat there in a dressing room and gone, this fella doesn't have our rashers?
Few things that Kevin Keegan did that baffled me a little bit, and I like Kevin, I got huge respect for him, but like, you know, when I made my Frank Lampard made his debut for England, and after the it has become a story about me scoring a winning goal for England, but anyway, that's fine, by the by, we'll take it. We played Belgium. And after the game, we didn't play great at the first half, but he didn't really say a lot to us. So, you know, it wasn't anything that was like, oh, you guys have got to do this. And then after the game, instead of it being like the most amazing thing for Frank and I, like Frank's made his debut, so lovely for his mum and dad to see it. I've scored the winner. What an amazing occasion for the family. Kevin went out in the press and started having a go, like saying about, oh, well, I told him at half time and I told him if they don't liven up, they're coming off. And it was like, and then that ends up being the story. And I thought, I'll drop it. Drop us out here, Kev. We just scored, you know, we just had a blinding day for the family. And, you know, you've made it about us getting bought off. So, or you giving it a little bit of a, you know, bollocking at half time. But that's it. I mean, Kevin was good. He was, I enjoyed his, you know, it wasn't many. I didn't get on great with Gerard Houllier. I didn't think he was that sincere. But apart from that, Roy Edmonds was a diamond. Loved Roy. Obviously worked for a long time with my dad, was amazing. Terry Venables. And I worked with some amazing managers. Graham Souness was tough, but I really respect him. He gave him my debut. And as for Gerard Houllier, for others, he was amazing. Like for Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher, they'd have loved him. But, you know, he wasn't that much for me. Although I will say he made me Liverpool captain, which was one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me. So there are pros and cons for all managers. That's if that is a way of copping out of the question, I think I've pretty much done it in every way.
It's a filibuster. You'd be picking splinters out of his arse for the next couple of weeks.
I'll throw these Skechers socks at you in a minute.
Listen, Jamie, that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for taking time out of your Friday afternoon as we record to speak to us. And in the absence of Ruby Walsh, and on behalf of Paddy and myself, thanks a million for joining us on From the Horse's Mouth.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Nice one.
Righto, that's all we've got time for on today's show. My thanks to Patrick, Rupert, and our very, very special guest, Mr. Jamie Redknapp. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed to the show. We're back on Friday with another very busy tipping edition. But until then, I've been Tom Nugent, and that was From the Horse's Mouth.